listening to a podcast from The National.
This is Extra Time. I'm Chitrabhanu Katlayal. This week, we take stock of the ongoing Cricket World Cup qualifier from the shared perspective of two rising teams in Asia, the UAE and Nepal. Even as the qualifier rages on in Zimbabwe, two things are clear. One, the UAE and Nepal will not play in the 2019 World Cup after failing to make the cut. And two, they're both officially classified as one-day international teams. This is obviously good news, as it means they will receive much-needed funds from the International Cricket Council to develop the sport in their countries. Staff writer Paul Radley was in Zimbabwe to cover the initial stages of the qualifier. He joins us in our Abu Dhabi studio today. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Steve.
We'll also be talking to Dougie Brown, the UAE coach, and Binod Das, the former Nepal captain. How big a deal is it to be deemed an ODI team by the ICC? And what does that mean for both these sides? Well, first question for you, Paul. You've been covering UAE cricket for more than a decade, and you've seen the ups and downs. How big was it, do you think, for the UAE players and the management to have retained the ODI status?
Well, it was crucial from the standpoint of the fact that it meant a lot of them would keep their jobs, which is obviously quite a big thing. Right. From the financing point of view, UAE cricket would survive without it survived for years without having ODI status and the financing, the extra financing that comes from the ICC, and was just plodding along very well. And the facilities that are here aren't ICC funded facilities. A stadium in Abu Dhabi isn't. Obviously, there is, you know, financing here in itself, but the extra money that they get from the ICC has allowed them over the past 4 years to really develop and transform the game. We see that most noticeably at the national team level. Now that they've crucially retained it, depending on quite how the future looks in terms of what the ICC are going to provide in the future, because they are having a review at the moment. Hopefully they can. That's what they've done in the past 4 years, and particularly the past 18 months, is just step one to use the phrase project. Hopefully the building blocks are going to be put in place to develop other areas of the game that will combine to create a greater whole for UAE cricket now.
Right. You made visits to Namibia and then Zimbabwe to follow the UAE's qualification process to the 2019 World Cup. And during both those visits, did you get a sense that the team was indeed at a crossroads? That they had to somehow do well in these competitions for the sake of keeping their ICC funding or perish?
Yeah, I think they really did. They went to Namibia. I don't know whether it's harsh to say that they didn't realise quite what the negative effects of not doing well there would be, but I think they had a reality check in the first couple of games. They lost a couple of games, and they were suddenly panicked about because they went there in great form, in great spirits, thinking, you know, we are one of the two highest ranked teams in this tournament. We should, if we play to our potential, easily make it through. There shouldn't be any worries about that.
Right.
Then when they did have the two defeats, the reality dawned on them that this could have a dramatic effect on the game in the UAE just by losing a couple of matches here. They stumbled their way through that tournament, did very well towards the end, showed their class there, and it felt like they were firefighting the whole time, and everybody breathed a massive sigh of relief once they'd made it through that. In actual fact, when they went to a tournament with a higher calibre of opposition at the qualifier in Zimbabwe, they seemed a lot more relaxed and felt like they could express themselves on the field a lot more. And they put in a couple of very good performances, particularly Papua New Guinea, the first game that they won. They looked back to their old selves of playing good, expressive cricket. And then in the win that they had in quite a tense game, even though it was a comfortable 6-wicket win in the end, it was quite a tense run chase against the Netherlands. That was like the crucial win that saw them through to the Super Sixes, eventually saw them retain the ODI status. Talking to them, they didn't feel the pressure that they felt in Namibia, where they'd sort of been firefighting, as it were. And hopefully, having achieved what they have, they can now develop that even further.
So we asked Dougie Brown, the UAE coach, what his thoughts were on UAE retaining the ODI status and his views on where UAE cricket is at the moment. Take a listen.
Well, we're obviously delighted to maintain one-day international status and also to reach Super Six. Mm-hmm. These were two things that we set out to do over the course of the weeks leading up to this competition and the months before. So it's great to see all the hard work that everybody has actually put in paying off over the course of this tournament. I guess the two disappointing things so far in Super 6 is the fact that we've probably not quite managed to deliver our best performance mm-hmm. over the two games against Ireland and Scotland.
Right.
That said, we still played some good passages of play, but it's really important that we bring sort of 100 overs of consistency to the party over the next couple of matches.
Right. Did the fact that you could not qualify for the World Cup, was that a bit of a dampener on the team, or are you a half-glass full type of person?
Yeah, I'm always somebody that looks for the positives in situations.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, let's not pull any punches. Qualifying for the World Cup against the standard of opposition here in this tournament was always going to be a massive ask.
Right.
That said, we actually believed when we left Dubai that it was still a possibility. We knew that we'd have to play really solid cricket all the way through, and for the main part, we have done. Even in defeat, we've played some really good games of cricket, and what we've done is we've managed to get some of the full member teams to properly sit up and take notice of what we do in the UAE and how we play our cricket.
Right.
That, for me, is very, very rewarding when you get top international players coming up and complimenting you for the performance of your team. And I think that's been absolutely magnificent. Yes, it's disappointing not to qualify for a World Cup, because if this was 4 years ago in 2015,
mm-hmm.
at this stage, we would have already qualified for the World Cup if the same number of teams were there as last time. They're not, and therefore we can't qualify. However, we can probably still have an enormous say in the result of this tournament. We've got to play two matches, both against two of the favourites at the start of the competition.
Mm.
Tomorrow against Afghanistan, and then in 2 days after that against Zimbabwe. And that's a brilliant challenge for us. It's a great stage for us to go and further sort of showcase UAE cricket. That for me is really, really exciting.
Right. You mentioned Ireland and Scotland having lost to them, and obviously you were disappointed about that. But what is there a difference in the quality between these sides, between the UAE and then Ireland and Scotland, or is it just maybe certain key moments? Maybe is it luck that was factored in? What do you think contributed to the defeats to these two teams?
It's pretty simple. We couldn't pick a strongest team for one.
Mm.
I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm not going to go there. That's just a statement of fact.
Sure.
But against Ireland, we made poor decisions. We were inconsistent with the ball. Then we lost wickets in a fairly naive way.
Mm.
If you do that against anybody, you're not going to win games of cricket. I mean, what we've shown against both these teams in the past is that we can compete against them, and the difference in standard, if there is any at all, is marginal.
Mm.
They have been on their respective journeys for a lot longer than what our players have been on their journey for. They're a much more experienced side than what we are.
True.
And it doesn't really matter about the ages of the respective teams.
Mm.
The fact is, both these teams have played a lot more cricket at this level than what we as a cricket team have. That, in a big tournament, makes a huge difference, I feel.
Mm.
But the difference in standard, person on person, is actually it's actually negligible, if at all. So what we do need to ensure is that when we go into a big game, and we're going to embark upon a big game tomorrow against Afghanistan, who are an exceptionally good side, despite the results in the competition,
right.
Firstly, that we just remember what our processes need to be. And I think if we're honest about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
Over the last two matches against both Scotland and Ireland, we've probably gone away from process, and we've gone away from the strategy that we've tried to implement as a team throughout the course of this tournament. So the message has very much been, let's get back to process and mm-hmm. just remember how we're trying to play our cricket as a team. And I think if we keep things as short-term as that, I think it will get us to a decent point in both of the next two matches. If we go away from it,
mm-hmm.
then clearly it's going to be difficult, because both games that we're playing are against very, very strong opposition.
Right. I wanted to broaden the horizon a little bit. What, in your opinion, is the actual playing relevance of keeping the ODI status? And Paul made a point in one of his pieces that obviously the funding is great, you know, that benefits UAE cricket. There's no doubt about that. But the fact that UAE played just 31 matches over the past 4 years between, you know, securing it the first time and then retaining it, you know, Sri Lanka played the same number of games in 1 year. So do you think the UAE probably need to play more matches? What in your opinion, is needs to be done now that you've secured the ODI status again?
Well, I'm actually just, I've been in a meeting this morning with ICC talking about exactly that. You know, as yet, we don't know what it looks like for the next period of time. You know, that decision is not in our hands, and that won't be made until later on this year. Okay. Look, it's always great to play more ODI cricket, of course it is, particularly against the full member teams, like we've had an opportunity to do here, and we will have further opportunity to do over the next few days. We're very fortunate in Dubai. We're geographically extremely well placed, and we get a number of opportunities which are not ODI games, but they are against that type of standard of opposition. We're talking about national A-sides. Mm-hmm. The England Lions were across, you know, a couple of years ago. So there is opportunity to play against really good teams. But I think if you speak to any associate team who is currently here at this tournament, that's the defining thing: getting opportunity to play more consistently, more regularly against a higher level of competition than what we currently do is absolutely critical to allowing our individual games within our countries to continue going in the correct direction. It would be great that, you know, we could play 25, 30 matches in a calendar year. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, funding doesn't allow that to be the case, and that's probably the primary thing that stops us from playing more ODI cricket. It's just the costs attached to staging games are incredibly high, and right. We just don't have enough money to be able to play these matches.
Mm. What do you think are the challenges that lie ahead for you as a coach from here on, as well as for the team? Do you have certain goals that you've listed out in the short, medium to long terms?
Yeah, I mean, we're just looking at what we are doing with regards to the team and the development of the team moving forward from here. And this is probably not the right place to discuss what we are looking to try and do. But I think the key thing is making sure that, firstly, we increase the size of our playing pool. That's critical to us moving forwards over the next four-year cycle and beyond. We need to make sure that we've got the best players in the UAE currently involved. Maybe if not on full-time contracts, certainly involved in a training group or training squads. Okay. That's critical to us moving forward as well. You know, we have a number of very good young under-19 players. Mm-hmm. A lot of them actually study outside of the country, although they're born and brought up in the UAE. So it's making sure that we get a full cross-section of, you know, making sure that today is looked after and we've got our best players stepping out in the field every single day. Mm-hmm. But also we need to be very mindful about what the future looks like, because we cannot keep going with the same players over the next 5, 6, 7 years, because, you know, if you just can't, because players get older, and, you know, we need to be showing a pathway for our younger players to ensure that we are consistently replacing players who fall off the other end of the national side. That's very important, but also making sure that certainly people have an avenue in which to showcase their ability more regularly than what they do.
So, Paul, what are your thoughts on the UAE retaining the ODI status? I know you've had a very sobering analysis of the achievement in one of your pieces that you did from Zimbabwe.
Yeah, obviously we've mentioned ad nauseum the financial benefits of it. Obviously that's great. But in actual fact, the playing effects of it, of having this status of the privilege of playing ODI cricket, it's actually been quite negligible over the time that the UAE, since the UAE clinched that status by qualifying for the 2015 World Cup at the previous qualifier in New Zealand, to retain it, the point at which they retained it this time in Zimbabwe. They played 31 one-day internationals over the course of that 4 years.
Right.
The majority of those were in ICC competition or matches that were just organised basically as practice for practice series before those ICC competitions. In the same space of time, that 4 years, on average, Sri Lanka had been playing, just to pick Sri Lanka, to just think about all the full member teams, Sri Lanka, a team that play a lot of one-day international cricket,
right.
They had played getting close to the same amount on average per year in the same amount of time as the UAE had played in over that whole four-year period. So I think that's the next step is for the ICC and for the UAE, for Emirates Cricket Board, to find a way of arranging more one-day international matches to give mm-hmm. their players exposure at that level, and in particular matches against full member nations. I think, like Dougie said, that there's a cost element to that that's quite prohibitive. Right. But if the game is going to develop, then that is sort of the next step that needs to happen. And there's no bar in terms of, like Dougie says, UAE is very accessible. There's always countries, national teams passing through here and playing series against, for instance, Pakistan.
Right.
Often have like two international teams come here per winter.
Mm.
They use the UAE's grounds. They don't play official matches against the national team because of a cost reason. There should be a solution found to allow the UAE to play both Pakistan and whichever touring team that come and play here as well, to give the national team more matches to give just more credibility to the fact that they are supposedly an ODI nation.
Right. It must feel different for you, doesn't it, where the UAE qualified for the ODI status about 4 years ago.
Mm.
It was possibly a different atmosphere.
Yes.
That you experienced?
Well, that was different then, because UAE had achieved this massive dream. All the players, you know, had achieved their goal of going to the World Cup, which was everything that was driving them. They didn't go to that tournament thinking, oh, we've got to get ODI status. They thought, you know, we are a tournament a few matches away from achieving what we've always been playing for in our lives, going to a World Cup and playing in that. Now the ICC have shrunk the World Cup and made the amount of openings for countries beyond the test sphere so ridiculously limited. It is something that they actually went to this tournament, and a lot of teams went to this tournament with that specific goal in mind, achieve that status. Then, you know, you can see the effects of it, the certain effects it has on the game in our country.
Right. Obviously, the other team we're going to be talking about is Nepal. Dougie mentioned the fact that it was also important to tap the talent for the future, you know, including cricketers who were born and raised in this country, and to expand the talent pool, as it were. Do you think Nepal have an advantage over the UAE in that cricket is a popular sport in the country, which it is not over here? Footballers, obviously. Do you think they have an advantage, a cultural advantage, if you want, compared to the UAE?
Well, I think that there's unique factors that work. If you look at every country, you look at Ireland, you look at Afghanistan, you look at Nepal, you look at UAE, there are unique factors that are at play in each of those countries that you might say some of them are pros and some of the cons.
Right.
Some of them are cons. In Nepal, obviously massive, huge following for the game. Big youth participation. UAE doesn't really have that. Obviously, it's got nothing like the numbers, but also it faces other problems in terms of the fact that talented cricketers that reach the age of 18 do often, like Dougie said, go and travel abroad to study,
right.
And then they're lost to the system here, and because of the other administrative effects over here, that can be sort of terminal for a player's cricket career over here, and if they're a really talented player, then obviously that's, you know, another talented player lost to the game over here. But there are other pros, and you know, that just is the prevailing way of doing things over here. So they're pretty sort of well versed in finding solutions for issues like that. So it's no point saying, oh, we need, you know, 30 million avid cricket followers over here like they've got in Nepal, because it's just not going to happen. They just need to find a different way of doing things. And there are, you know, there's always solutions.
Right. You mentioned pros and cons. Well, obviously, what the UAE have is a fairly good administration of the game, which Nepal doesn't. And in our conversation with Binod Das, the former Nepal captain, he alluded to that, where he was mildly critical of the system that's in place there and the fact that maybe they haven't received as much help from the government and from the cricket board, which is obviously going through some turmoil at this point. But this is some of what he had to say about the problems that Nepal cricket faces today.
Well, all my life, I mean, ever since I remember, since 1996, when I first started as a player, we've always believed that we've got the potential to play at the highest level because when I was coming through the under-19 ranks and when we played against the test-playing nations, we managed to beat a couple of those test-playing nations at the under-19 level. So that actually made me believe that if we could improve on the skill levels that we have right now, mm-hmm. it's actually not that it's not that tall a ask to one day become one of the countries who would be competing against this big nation. So since 1996-97 to now, I think we have been trying very hard, but in spite of our efforts being put into, I mean the efforts that all the cricket players and people who love this game so wholeheartedly have supported us so much in all these 20 years. Mm. But all these things aside, the only thing that was stopping us was the proper management of this sports in this country.
Right.
And we all agree to the fact that the cricket actually has not been managed well in this country. But yes, in terms of skills and in terms of the caliber of players, we never had doubts that one day we'll end up playing at the highest level. So all the accolades should go to the players who have made it possible for Nepal at the time where there is no cricket board in operation in the country, and at the time where even government has failed to do justice to the glory that this sport has brought into the country.
Yeah, you mentioned that once you take care of the cricketing aspect of the team, then everything else will fall into place. And now that you received the ODI status, do you think this will have a knock-on effect, a positive effect, on, say, the structure around the game itself? Do you think the government will now step in and support you? What do you see happening over the next maybe couple of years?
We never had problems with talent. We've got skill level in this country is in abundance. I mean, it's still in this moment of time when we have these under 16 trials or under 19 trials, mm-hmm. hundreds of kids come and participate in that. And that's like the beauty of sports in this country. Apart from that, we've got a massive fan following in this country where even if you host a good standard of a cricket game at TU International Ground,
right.
you'll see about 15,000-18,000 people turning up to watch that cricket game of cricket.
Wow.
So love for the game is immense in this country. Now, only love for the game and skill level will not sustain you at the ODI level. You need your infrastructure to be put into place. You
right.
need your governance to be put into place. You need a cricket board that could actually have a bargaining power or actually have a power to make decisions on behalf of Nepal cricket.
Mm.
At the moment, since we don't have a cricket board and then we've got the ODI status, there is nobody to go and talk to other cricket boards to host a bilateral series or even to play in a bilateral series or even to organize any sort of event
right.
that could materialize this dream of playing in ODI. We had the T20 status a couple of years back.
Mm.
And we could hardly play a game of T20 International. We only had one game on our initiation, that is,
mm-hmm.
Where Pugudu stepped in when Hong Kong team was in Sri Lanka, and then he requested ICC if we could play a couple of T20 matches against Hong Kong in Sri Lanka,
mm-hmm.
and ICC obliged it. So that's the only ODI International that we played on our initiation. Otherwise, we had it for 2 years and didn't even play a single T20 International in those 2 years on our initiation. And we've got a pretty similar situation here where we have the ODI status for 4 years. But if we don't sort out our problems with related to board and we don't sort out the problem in relation to our governance,
mm-hmm.
who looks after cricket in this country, we might end up doing the same thing, and we might not make any use of the ODI status. And it might actually backfire for us, because earlier in division cricket, we had ICC who would make, your calendar where you're playing in a World Cricket League, right, home and away series and all these things. But once you have the ODI status, it's up to you to make your own calendar. Mm. And if you don't have a cricket board, you're going to struggle. So yes, as you rightly pointed out, we need to have a cricket board in place, first of all. And then after that, the most important thing would be to develop the infrastructure in these 4 years. And then comes the development of players, the development of the support staff, like you can name it. You can name the coaches, the curators, the scorers, all these things. You need to work on it for these 4 years. You see, I've been saying this on a couple of occasions, and I've already said this on a couple of occasions already. You see, you've got two templates to work on. Now, Afghanistan got ODI status maybe for 4 years, and then you look at them, how they worked on their infrastructure, how they developed their first-class cricket, and how where they are now.
Absolutely.
Now, Kenya had ODI status for such a long time, but they didn't use it to make a positive impact in their cricket, and look at them where they are lying now. They're in Division 3, I think. So we've got two templates to work on. I believe we are wise enough to choose the Afghanistan way rather than the Kenya way.
Right.
And reach where Afghanistan is today. That's the best template to work on at the moment.
So how optimistic are you?
Very optimistic at the moment, because you see, you cannot deny millions of people what they deserve. They deserve their own team competing at the highest level, and they want to share their own team rather than sharing some other teams in the sport. So you cannot deny them that for long. And you should understand that a group of 30 people cannot dictate terms when it comes to looking after the benefits of 30 million people in this country.
Right.
So about 30 million of this country wants cricket to be at the helm. And we 30 people who have looked after cricket for these 30 years needs to decide that we need to work for the betterment of cricket, and then we need to take cricket where it belongs to.
So, Paul, when Nepal achieved their ODI status, one of the first reactions I got from you was through a tweet in which you said it would be fun if the UAE and Nepal actually played a one-day series against each other. What are the prospects of that happening?
Yeah, I was very excited by that idea. Get on the plane straight away to a series in Kathmandu. That would be absolutely fantastic, because the UAE have played there in the past. Probably, I'd say, even though the UAE have played at World Cups, probably the biggest, well, definitely the biggest crowd they've ever played in front of would just have been a match in TU International Ground there. Absolutely thousands of people go and watch Nepal play. I can't even remember. I'm just racking my brain as to what exact series that was. And there were thousands and thousands of people there. And you could only think that if, with the added interest and excitement that's created by it being a full one-day international series, those numbers would be, you know, if so long as they could fit them in, they'd be even greater. It'd be absolutely brilliant to see. And in actual fact, a return series over here would be great. I remember seeing a series, I think it was ACC Trophy final. I can't remember what year the UAE and Nepal played each other in the final,
right,
in Sharjah, and it was tied. The final was tied, and they shared the trophy. And there were thousands of Nepali fans there for that game as well. So to actually witness it, an away series for the UAE, a full one-day international series would just be. It would be absolutely fantastic.
Binod Das made an interesting point in that getting a crowd of the size of about 18,000 to 20,000 to come and watch two associate-level teams play. These are not test nations. Associate nations play. It's quite fascinating. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this is what Binod had to say as well about the series.
Well, I won't say it's a perfect. I would say it's a must for countries like us.
Right.
I mean, just imagine Nepal and UAE playing at the TU grounds, and then the stadium filled to capacity. I mean, that would be a sight to behold of. I mean, who would not want this? So, as a cricket playing, as a cricket loving public of this country, and then you at the far side, I'm a cricketer, and I love cricket so much, and I want cricket to go internationally. So, what could be a better sight than watching two associate? still associate nations, having got the ODI status, playing in front of 20,000 people,
yeah,
and 20,000 people cheering for the team. Even test-playing nations, in some test-playing nations, you won't get the crowd of about 5,000, 7,000 people watching a game of cricket.
True.
So there is a associate nation, which could offer you 20,000 viewership and a million more viewership on TV.
Hmm.
So why not? It has to be done somehow.
Sure.
And as I said, it only boils down to the thing that we need to have a stable governing body in our cricket association,
mm-hmm,
which could actually deal with all these proposals.
Cool. Final question for you, Binod. Do you see yourself coaching the Nepal national team one day?
Well, that is my aspiration, actually. I mean, I've done everything possible at my end to do that.
Right.
As I've been with the national team before, as I've done my bit, and then I was offered to look after the under-19s. I've done that, mm-hmm, with the best to my ability. So why not? I mean, if the opportunity comes and if I'm thought of to be a capable guy, why not? I would love to do that. And who would not want to contribute to the nation's cricket, for which a person has given his 20 years. I've given my 20 years to cricket in this country.
Right.
And that remains my aspiration. I would love to contribute in any possible way that comes my way.
A big thank you to Paul Radley, Dougie Brown and Binod Das for having joined us today. This episode of Extra Time was produced by Kevin Jeffers. You can subscribe to Extra Time on Apple Podcast or your favorite podcasting app. You can continue to follow our cricket coverage on our website, thenational.ae/sport, and on Twitter @NatSportUAE. I am Chitravanu Kadlai.